A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling, so I just did.
Good morning and welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse Show. And yes, we better get used to those raindrops today. They are probably going to be falling for most of the day. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. You can call us at 801-575-8255 or you can text us at 57500. Let's go back to Mary, who's on the line in South Jordan. Mary, what was your question?
Thank you. I have a Golden Delicious dwarf tree that's no longer dwarfed, it's huge, that was planted in 1966, is still going pretty good. But I still get the mottling costs. Tell me what I need to use to spray them and how often.
Well, codling moth is one of the, if you grow apples, can be the bane of your existence. And so
it
generally, you start spraying about 10 days after the blossoms drop, and then you would have to follow the label of what you're using. Now, the challenge here is that you spray a lot. And so if you have the ability, like internet access, you can subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates, and they will tell you when you need to spray. And so, because there aren't really set calendar days, because every year is different, and so what people have usually done is just sprayed more than they need to because they're not sure. But Utah State University monitors when the generations will start to hatch and tell you, okay, you need to get sprays on for this period of time, but then the second generation won't come out until, you know, a month or two later, and you need to start spraying again, and so you can skip sprays. And so on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, we've posted the subscriptions, and maybe we can boost those back up to the top. Maybe if Caitlin can move that. If you go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, there is a link to subscribe to the Pest Lab updates. They're free, and USU does not sell your email to anybody, and so you're not going to be getting spammed due to USU.
Okay, and do they recommend the type of spray? And
yes, they will give you several
where
options.
Where to buy it?
They do.
Okay.
So generally, the options out there right now, even garden centers will have a few. You want to rotate a little bit, but that first spray, because it's usually has the most pressure, you for just that first spray, you may use something like permethrin, but your next spray, you would switch over to something like Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew or another spinosad product. And then the third spray, you could switch over to like pyrethrins, but all those sprays will be recommended in there.
All right, Mary, thank you for your call this morning. We are getting a number of follow-up questions about raspberries, which were our feature at the top of the hour. And, Tom, the first one wants to know, could you please address planting raspberries at a high altitude and, you know, issues with deer? And this is from
yes.
Angie.
So, short season, you would want to grow summer-bearing raspberries. And in the fact sheet we posted, it will have a list of those. Now, at a break, maybe I can dig this up, but USU has some other fact sheets on comparisons of particular varieties and their survival.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can post those in a little bit also. But you don't want to do the fall-bearing ones because you oftentimes lose a lot of your fall crop due to early frost. You need to have at least 130 frost-free days for the fall-bearing raspberries to become worth it. And then you would probably want to use a variety called Polka because it's earlier. So that's my suggestions on as far as the types to grow. And then deer, All you can really do is exclude the deer by enclosing your raspberry patch with some sort of fencing that's 6 feet, but preferably 8 feet tall to keep the deer out. And then just you have to make some sort of a gate or an entrance you can get in and out of, and then close to keep the deer out. Otherwise, a lot of the sprays and things, you know, I'm not too hip about spraying coyote urine all over my raspberries or cougar urine. And so those, the repellents can work, but then you're going to try to eat those. And so in this case, I think that a few hundred dollars of posts and some sort of inexpensive fencing would be worth it.
All right. Lyman in the Heber Valley also has some questions about raspberries. Good morning, Lyman. What are your questions?
Hi. Thanks for talking about the raspberries. Just wondering how much or how little water and fertilizer you recommend.
Okay. So you're going to water them once established twice a week, and you want water to penetrate 6 inches to a foot into the soil. And sometimes you may, especially if you have a sandy soil, you may need to do that three times a week. Or if your berries are producing, the actual plants are producing berries at the particular time, you may temporarily water three times a week just so that you can maximize the size of your fruit. So as far as fertilizer, you want about 1 quart of 16-16-16 or 20-0-0 per, I believe it's 100 feet of row. So it goes quite a ways. And I will look that up and make sure on the actual rate. But that fact sheet that we posted on our greenhouse Facebook page has the actual recommended rate in there. So,
okay. Well, that's great. Thank you. And just as an FYI, I live up in the Heber Valley. We have lots of deer. Uh-huh. I don't know what variety of raspberry I have, but they leave the raspberries alone completely.
Yeah. And that's fascinating because they, you know, people will always,
sweet. Why do they leave them alone?
that's funny. I will hear from people, you know, this plant in my yard is deer resistant, but you go a couple of miles down the road and the same plant is just torn up. And sometimes deer are not acclimated to certain plants. And so in one spot like Colorado, you could have something that the deer aren't acclimated to, but in Utah, it gets torn up and vice versa. And so it's really hard to know for sure. But yeah, if the deer aren't touching your raspberries, that's great. And so I did get the fact sheet up, and a general recommendation for established planting is to apply 3 to 5 pounds of urea or 20-0-0 per 100 feet. So, yeah.
All right, Lyman, thank you so much for your call this morning. John in Riverton also had a question about raspberries. He's going to take out a portion of his lawn to plant raspberries, and he wants to know what a good barrier would be to put between the lawn and the raspberry patch.
Well, if he has Kentucky bluegrass, unless he goes a couple of feet deep, both the raspberries and the grass are just going to laugh at him.
Oh,
because they'll go right under cement and they'll go right under the metal edging. So there's only one company I know of that sells barrier that will go a couple of feet deep. And I believe they're 2-foot by 2-foot strips, and a box of 20 is around $200. And that's Forestry Supply. You can just Google Forestry Supply and put in weed barrier and it'll come up. But it can be expensive, but you would need something 18 inches to 2 feet deep.
All right. Before we take a break, one more question here. Mariah in Tooele wants to know what the best way to activate biochar for her garden is.
Well, I'm not sure what she really means, because it should be already activated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like a little bit of clarification, because when you get biochar, there's nothing special you need to do besides blend it into your soil.
What is
to make it
for
do
those of
thing.
Us who don't know
so
what
biochar is wood that has been burned in a low oxygen environment.
And why would you put that in your soil?
Well, it will what it does is that it holds on to soil nutrients and creates drainage. The problem we run into is sometimes it can be a little bit salty, and so you don't want to overdo it. And so there's a thing out there right now that it kind of comes and goes, but you can build your own biochar rig out of barrels or depending on the size, and you get it going, and you will get some liquid that comes off of it that you can use for biofuel, and then what's left over looks like almost like charcoal, except for it's been burned in that low oxygen environment. You crush it up and then you mix it into your soil. And where it comes from is in Latin America and pre-Columbian times. I can't remember if it was the Incan or the Aztec civilization, but they built these islands of agriculture, and one of the main ingredients they used was this biochar, and it made it so that they could farm. And so it's kind of had a resurgence.
You're like a walking encyclopedia.
My wife says I'm a weirdo. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so this biochar is something that can be beneficial in Utah soils, but because it can be a little bit salty, you don't want to overdo it. And so if you're going to use biochar, you know, some other products that will have some similar attributes would be something like zeolite or some of these other expanded clays.
But you can just put it in the soil. You shouldn't need to activate it in
any
way.
No, you don't need someone like chanting over it or to bless it or anything to
be
active. It's just going to do
its thing. Could entertain us.
Yes, yes.
And we need to take a break. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse. Special request from Ton Bettis there on the falling rain. Thank you for joining us this morning. Ton, our next texter wants to know, which is better as a soil additive, horse dung or steer manure?
Well,
I'd rather listen to the falling rain than talk about that exact topic, but it's important.
It is. The problem I'm having is it depends on how it was treated. Because a lot of times horse manure is coming off of fields that are just full of weeds. Mm-hmm. And the horses feed on these plants and the seeds pass through their digestive system. And so I have run into huge problems by applying raw horse manure in the fall, just like an inch or so. And the next year, we had just unimaginable weed problems.
So you're saying neither one, maybe?
Well, and
depending on how
they're... Or both, you know, depending on the source. And so if the steer manure is bagged, those are generally safer. Or if it's coming from like a dairy, because those dairy cows get very high quality feed that's usually fairly weed free. And so I can't really say this one or that one, because when they break down, they're going to be very similar in what they do. But it's just more that they need to ensure that there isn't a lot of weed seed. And so there's people will say, well, it's aged. All that means is it sat there. And the weed seeds aren't dead. It has to be composted at temperatures of upwards of 150 degrees for several weeks to actually kill those weed seeds in it. And so if you can find an operation that's trustworthy and that will do such things, then go ahead. But if it's just somebody selling horse manure off their overgrazed pasture that's full of weeds, then I would be very leery.
All right, let's go to our next caller. Lewis is in Santa Quinn. Good morning, Lewis. How can we help you?
Good morning, guys. I had a quick couple questions for you. One of them is for my roses. I just bought some roses out of Costco, and they're the hybrid tea, the fragrant rose collection. And people were just taking them left and right, so I didn't want to get up a lot of roses. So I bought like three boxes, and they have two of them in each. Now, I have them inside my home right now. I just wanted to know, how do I water them inside the house? Or is it a good time to plant them outside? Or when do I plant them outside?
So on them, what kind of containers are the roses in?
They are in bags.
Okay. And are they leafing out already?
Yes, one of them.
Okay. So what you're going to need to do is either carefully open up that bag or put a small hole in it and then just drizzle enough water into it, because it's probably in shredded newspaper or sawdust, and just drizzle enough water in there that the water self-distributes through the root system and through that bag to keep it moist. And with their being in bags that are totally enclosed, I don't think that you'll need to do it very often.
Okay. And what's a good time to plant them outside?
Well, if they were completely dormant and they were not starting to leaf out, I would say plant them. But with them starting to form leaves, you're going to need to hold them until at least, you know, the first couple of weeks of April, and then even after that, if we get some frosts in, you're going to need to put buckets or something over them to protect them.
Okay. And one last question. So I have dogs on my property, and my back grass is actually, you know, there's some spots that are bare now without grass. It looks like it's starting to come out. What can I top dress the grass with?
Well, is the grass dead from the dogs using it as a restroom or traffic?
No, just traffic.
Okay, there's nothing really. You're going to have to exclude the dogs from that area for the grass to recover, because if they're running back and forth all day long in a pattern, it's just too much for the grass over time, and the grass gets overwhelmed and you have bare ground.
I can't top dress it with anything. Just...
No, it's almost something that if the dogs say they like to say hi to people on the fence, or they like to chase cars back and forth, mm-hmm. or they just, you know, if you have a line that they go back and forth that they're kind of chained to, there's just, besides controlling where they're walking, almost like a managed pasture to where you're excluding them from a part of the yard every week and changing them, that would be the only way that grass could recover, is by reducing the traffic by not allowing them to keep going there.
We need to take a break, and the number to call 801-575-8255.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.